Hi, this is Phil Lairness, sitting alongside my wife, Lily Lairness. As we travel through the third decade of the 21st century, it's good to know that the Midweek Drive and Midweek Drive Morning Editions continue to produce a minimum of 4 hours of weekly audio goodness on Siren Radio and southsidebroadcasting.podbean.com. Why do you have that glazed expression on your face, Lil?
Too many numbers in that announcement.
Well, there we are. That was the music of Samantha Dagnino, who's going to be joining us in a few seconds. But it is Annette Andre's letter from San Diego, formerly letter from upstate New York. But Annette Andre is with us. How are you, Annette? Is life treating you well?
I'm fine, thank you, Alec. Yes,
excellent. Fine, well, as I say, we've got Pamela Sue Mann with us as well. We've also got Samantha Dagnino with us. It's awesome. We've heard some of Samantha's awesome music, but we're going to hear your awesome New York, well, your awesome letter now. Share with us, what things are you going to speak about today?
You don't say. Winston Churchill hammered the nail when he despaired that the US and the UK were two countries divided by a common language. since his time and when I first broadcast this talk several years ago, things have only gotten worse on this side of the Atlantic. Literally, dozens of once common words have vanished from the American vocabulary, the blanks filled in with a barrage of likes and kind ofs that shepherd a loss of character and color, such as this bit of doggerel written more than 60 years ago by the American humorist S.J. Perlman, satirizing the hard-boiled noir novels and films featuring sexy dolls and even sexier gunsels. Kapow, kapow, somewhere a Roscoe barked in the night. Colorful in its offhanded toughness, there's a generous use of a vocabulary designed to accurately set the scene, graphic, comic book style of prose that predates Andy Warhol and the pop art movement. But it's the punchy swagger of the kapows followed by the raffish Roscoe barking that makes me want to cry for the loss of this salty creativity in today's language. But let's listen to the same sentence translated into today's street speak. Instead of kapow, kapow, somewhere Roscoe barked in the night, we'd get, it was kind of like bang. No, somewhere a gun sort of went off like in the night. Awesome. How did this happen? The purging of all color and visual action from our everyday speech in what seems to me an overnight blitzkrieg. When did like first make its entrance as verbal quotation marks, and why? How has it managed to slither python-like into daily conversation to savage the life out of exchanges spoken by almost the global population of under 25s? Hard on the galloping lead of like is the, you know, interjected seemingly in random burps, as if prompted by wayward electrical signals from a brain struggling to remember its purpose. And what to make of the sort of and kind of definitions that take no responsibility for positive identity? Once the keystone of the courtroom, the declarative sentence, "That's the rotter, your worship, he's the one what's done her in," has surrendered unconditionally to the shilly-shally hedging of fact or conviction. Few today seem brave enough to claim ownership of a personal opinion without a qualifier, dragging it down like a hand from the grave. Instead of, "She was buck naked," you can bet the farm that some clown is certain to report that the lady in question, kind of had no knickers on. And what indeed to make of awesome? In the not too distant past, this was ejaculated usually by first-time visitors to the Grand Canyon or the moon. Now, your slice of pizza is up for the prize in this one-size-fits-all measure of wonder and importance. Awesome users equate, without prejudice, the removal of a brain tumor and the contents of a nappy. It seems to me that the average English speaker today can skate along comfortably with a dozen or so words or phrases. No self-respecting newscast can report a story without having reached out to the mayor or noted that a company's stock loss has impacted its bottom line. Wiped away without a trace of dozens of far more serviceable words such as tracked down or deflated that might have brought a lively mental image to the cold fact. Here's a good spot to assure you that I'm not campaigning to put a freeze on adding any new words to our vocabulary, as the French enjoy threatening every 5 years. I'm not suggesting for a moment that, for example, the sturdy modern removal van can be renamed Pantechnicon, as its Edwardian cousin was known. No, I'm not a verbal Luddite. I mean, in my teen years, I segued from hot jazz to cool and swapped groovy for the much cooler hip. But as an actress, my training placed the word at the very center of my performance. From the silken lines of Shakespeare to an off-the-rack sitcom, Actors and language are in a constant flirtation, the actor always itching to add value to a speech. But what in the world could anyone at the BBC have been thinking when, as I heard on an episode of a new TV thriller set in the 1960s, a character say, "He's like quite upset with you." As I remember the 60s, "like" knew its place in a sentence and was quite happy to take second or third billing. Clearly, there's no one over the age of 30 left in the production at the Beeb. Whatever may be the reason behind this sea change in how we communicate, I harbor a ray of hope that the writers whose lifeblood is language will ride to the rescue to stem the spread of this epidemic of mindless babble. I base the promise of this 11th hour salvation on a story my husband Arthur told me years ago of his friend Bernie, a writer for the popular 1960s TV series Bewitched. It's one of those anecdotes that finishes with both a belly laugh and a bittersweet aftertaste of self-awareness. Arthur entered Bernie's office to find him in a deep depression, staring at a sheet of paper in his typewriter. "What's wrong, Bernie?" Arthur asked. "I was just sitting here thinking that if I died of a heart attack now, the last line I wrote was, 'Tabitha want monkey.'" Along with the cliche, "You are what you eat," I suggest adding, "How you say it says who you are." Know what I mean?
Annette, that was like so awesome, like so amazing, and totally like tremendous, you know?
And I'm reaching out to you to...
Yeah, well, we have got a fantastic lineup, a magnificent seven in all sorts of ways, basically, or at least a magnificent six, if you exclude myself. We've got the return of Jean Bruce Scott. How are you, Jean? Jean will be fine once she unmutes herself. But we've also got the return of the awesome individual who indeed was born in Caracas, Venezuela. It's Samantha Dagnino. How are you, Sammy?
I'm good. Happy Excellent. To be back.
And you see, you've worked that Venezuelan magic and automatically unmuted Jean Bruce Scott. How are you, Jean?
Hello, I'm good. Thank you so much. I have new glasses and I thought I could adjust where my screen was, but unfortunately I couldn't find the mute.
Hey, listen, we've all been there in the Zoom world in which we find ourselves, but keeping the like tick boxes going, that awesome and curious individual, Jessica Burtis. How are you, Jessica?
I am doing pretty well. I cannot believe it's almost Halloween.
Hence the background. And making her debut on the program today, a level 3 undergraduate at the University of Lincoln. She was very impressed with the shout out we gave her when I was co-hosting with yourself, Pamela Suman. We were talking about the influence of the Beatles and so on an episode of New York Real Talk. It's Lucy Mills. How are you, Lucy?
Hello, I'm good, thank you. Very happy to be here.
There we are. It's always impressive when you make that debut. I mean, it's always good. Sammy, I want to come to you first. We'll talk about Annette's wonderful message in a few moments. But first off, what fantastic music you've been producing. I mean, we launched this particular program with Undone, which has an extraordinarily interesting video. But then you are a polymath of the 21st century. I mean, born in Caracas, Venezuela, started doing advertisements when you were 4 years of age, joined a musical group at the age of 7, appeared in your first film at the age of 10. You've lived, as you know, in Miami and Los Angeles. You're now in Brooklyn, New York. I mean, you know, I thought it was only like Jean and Annette who had that kind of, you know, packed sort of lifestyle in the whole thing. But it's a phenomenal thing, basically. So do you see yourself as a director? Because let's not forget, you're a movie director as well. You've directed films, you've made films, you've acted. Where do you see yourself? Or is it just a case of just give me some concrete stone steps to lie upon and that'll be me, basically, in a very sort of difficult situation?
I kind of follow the dots. I love directing so much. And every time I do it, I learn a lot. So I think directing is my main goal. But I'm very happy to also create music and have the opportunity to combine the two mediums, because it really like gives a 360, you know, a whole perspective on the type of thing that I'm trying to do. So it's an exciting endeavor.
Well, as we said, it's always nice to actually move from Caracas, which I just think is great. I mean, the name itself, Caracas, Venezuela, it's great. Jean, have you got any questions you want to put to Samantha, or indeed any observations about the misuse of the English language that Annette has rightly, you know, flagged up as an issue?
Well, I think Annette has hit the nail on the head with the language situation. I too miss the written word and the spoken word as it was when I was growing up, but that's telling my age a bit. I do, however, really love both Pamela and Samantha's music. I was listening all this morning, and I think that the ouch, was that directed by Samantha? It's wonderful, wonderful. And Pamela, what a beautiful song. Once again, very haunting and just absolutely beautiful. Samantha, I don't know anything about grunge, so you're going to have to help educate me. And while you do, you might educate some of our audience here. But I love the backbeat. I love all of the drum. I've listened to all three of your songs, and they're so different and so very clever. So I had a great time this morning. And Annette, I just got to the part in your book where you met Peter Graves. So I was having a very difficult time putting the book down in order to come to this this little gathering here. So I've had a very, very happy morning, Alex. Thank you so much.
This Jean, is one of the reasons why you are, in the words of the genuine notion of brain surgery, an awesome individual to actually connect with the program, because you cover all the bases.
Oh, goodness. Well, you bring such wonderful guests on, and I get to go and explore who they are and go to their websites, and they're on Facebook. So everybody out there that's listening, please find their web pages, go to Spotify, listen to their music. Annette's book has a big sale going on right now with new pictures available for people to get. So it's just, I mean, there's the ingenuity and the enthusiasm and passion with which all three of these women approach their careers is awe-inspiring.
Well, I think that's absolutely so. Let's, Jessica, you're also, like Jean, somebody who always does her research for the whole thing. So who would you like to throw a couple of questions to? And have you had a chance to listen to Sammy's tremendous music? And are you, rather like myself, burning to ask the question? You've covered a version of And I Love Her, Beatles song, with Kurt Cobain. How did you sign up Kurt Cobain? Surely he passed away from this threshold a wee while ago.
We've been having conversations in my dreams. I dream about dead people a lot, and we have great friendships. And I asked him if it was okay, and he said yes.
She gives me everything.
Maybe, Sammy, it's the dead people who are dreaming about us. Just a thought. Anyway, Jessica, who would you like to go to?
I feel like there's so many questions I could ask. It's really hard trying to pick, like, just one. Can I ask two questions? Can I ask, like, okay, so first I want to ask Sammy a question, and I have a general one for everyone. So I'm very curious about, like, this grunge thing. I'm wondering, do you agree with the idea, Sammy, that grunge is, like, dead right now, kind of in pop culture, or do you think it's having, like, a revival or anything like that?
It's so dead. I every time I release a song, I am aware of this, but I just feel like it's important to be authentic to what you're feeling and not really follow what's happening out there. And I started playing electric guitar and I felt like I had all this anger and all this stuff that needed to come out and transform and transmute. So I went the grunge route because it felt authentic to me, even though I'm extremely aware that I'm completely out of sync with anything that's relevant in the music scene right now. So I feel like a lot of people are not very interested in feeling negative things or but I felt like it was important to have that outlet. What I love about electric guitars and grunge in general is that it provides that space to release anger and it's not something that a lot of people might connect with nowadays, but I feel like it's necessary, at least for me.
Yeah, I feel like that's like a very authentic approach to grunge. I feel like that's a lot of what it's about, is that kind of like self-expression, even if it's not very like popular in a pop culture way. I feel like I've been saying like a lot in a sentence, which is making me think of Annette's discussion.
Yeah, you're reading the script, Jessica. That's the important thing. You're reading the script. It's very good. It's called building irony into the program.
There we go. That's what I'm doing. And if I could ask a general question, I have to ask because it's the eve of Halloween. So I'm very curious about if any of you are celebrating Halloween or doing anything for it, or just staying in and watching movies or something.
I watch Rocky Picture Horror Show.
Are you? Very good. Very good.
It's a great movie.
It's a fantastic movie. Can you recite the lines along with it and sing?
Oh, I'm not quite there yet. Jenna, what was the Jenna? Damn it. Jenna.
Yeah. I'm sure when Richard O'Brien actually came up with the whole concept, he was waiting for a Venezuelan born actress to actually start reciting the lines via Zoom call. It was there. The whole sort of concept. Annette, in San Diego, I mean, it's trick or treating. Is it a case of, for goodness sakes, just go away?
You know, I don't really know. To begin with, Halloween means absolutely nothing to me, because I grew up in Australia. We didn't know about Halloween, and when I first came to England, it wasn't celebrated there. My daughter grew up without Halloween, and it was only after that suddenly it all started bursting on the scene and in its all its gruesome aspects. So I'm not a fan of Halloween. It means nothing to me. And I just look at people running around in witch costumes and throwing and running in. They don't even do things anymore to earn their sweets. What they do is they run up to the door, knock on the door, and you come holding this dish of sweets, and they grab and run away. And I think, what's the point? And then they go home and they go for the whole week on sugar. Energy, you know, and my grandkids were always a mess after. No,
which is
I'm
one of
sure
the reasons.
It's fun for the kids, and I've been to some parties, you know. So yeah,
And it's one of the reasons M&M's, of course, that well-known Mars-based confectionery company, have set up a full campaign this year, which indeed we've duly covered, encouraging people to scare responsibly. Very important, scare responsibly, because you just want to keep your focus right there. No heart attacks, please.
We get hundreds of kids.
That's because yourself and Randy are just so wonderful, welcoming people. They're always sort of saying, come on, let's see what magic we can get here.
We actually sit out on our front patio. We have a lovely little patio with a gate. And so we open up the gate and they come through there. And because there's a gate, the parents come with them. And so we get to meet a lot of the neighbors. So folks that we haven't seen, especially now with COVID, we'll be able to reconnect and meet the new children and the new families and all of that kind of stuff. So it's kind of fun for us. My mom and dad used to dress up and sit on the front porch. We haven't gone that far yet, but yeah, my granny, who was from Scotland and also probably didn't have Halloween, loved Halloween. And she would always dress up as something and sit on the porch and we'd give out candy. So that's kind of our tradition.
Lucy, in Lincoln, Halloween, does it mean anything at all? Or is it just a case of, look, it's scary enough being in the city of Lincoln. You should know, you teach there. For goodness sakes, what are you talking about?
Well, I think it's obviously living in a student area, it's more the case of an excuse to go to a party and have a few drinks rather than actually celebrating Halloween itself. But I went on a walk earlier and I did see lots of pumpkins in doorways. So at least that's a positive. It's not all drinking.
Yeah, it's nice to see that pumpkins are still effectively on the ballpark. Speaking about Halloween, of course, it's fair to say that your latest video, Sammy, is a very kind of extraordinary. It features Chris Kennedy as the quote unquote devilish dude. Now, a little bit worried about this, Sammy, for a couple of reasons. First of all, concerned that you might have caught a chill by actually sort of lying on a concrete block like that in a fairly scanty costume. I thought, you know, think about health and safety, Sammy. It's very important. And also, there's tobacco products being used as well. I'm thinking, oh, no. Anyway, apart from that, was that your take within Halloween? And does Halloween, did it have any resonance in Venezuela whatsoever?
Oh, it did. The costumes were not quite as available as in the US, so we got really creative with costumes. Like there weren't like Halloween stores and whatnot. So, but I've always been very creative. My family is full of, you know, artists. My dad is a rock star in my country, and my mom is an artist and chef, and we always like made our own things. So I remember just like building our own costumes. And that's why I started using cardboards and alternative materials as a source of inspiration in general, because I'm always like used to using things that I can find on the street or to create things.
We're going to squeeze in a copy of Indeed and I Love Her Now, which brings us neatly round to Lucy Mills. Lucy, your fondness for the Beatles. I mean, as I said before, when you came to me and said, I'd like to do my dissertation on the Beatles. And I said, but you weren't even born then. But then again, you did have one of my histories of journalism classes on the whole thing. So maybe that kind of biased you in some way. Why? Have you got any questions you want to put to Sammy or indeed the rest of the folk or Annette? Who indeed, I mean, I think it's fair to say, Annette, you've probably met all of the Beatles in various ways. Did you not?
No, I met by telephone Paul McCartney because I was working with his then girlfriend, Jane Asher. And he called, we were doing a filming together. And so he'd call her every night. And I happened to answer the phone one night and just had a quick chat, but he wanted to get off and talk to her. I met George and I met Ringo.
Oh, wow.
I never met John Lennon, which is a shame. I would have liked to have met him. Yeah, very much.
I actually met
George Harrison, actually, when I back then. I rather fancied him. Mm.
Really? Oh. Does Arthur know?
You took no notice of me whatsoever.
That's Jean, over to yourself.
Well, I took Randy once to a brunch at the Bel Air Hotel because it had been someplace that I'd been when I first got to Hollywood. Someone had taken me and it was a tremendous treat. So I took him and we were sitting there with the swans and this beautiful garden and all of this stuff. And Randy looked across and said, "I think that's Ringo Starr." And he kind of, he was trying not to look too hard. And Ringo came through the restaurant, the garden, and he walked straight to Randy and said, "Oh, I'm sorry. I thought I knew you." And Randy looked up and said, "Oh, you're Ringo Starr." And he said, "Yes, I am. Randy and Jeannie." So we had a little hello and a little greeting, and we've never forgotten that moment. It was like being touched by a star. We were touched by a star, and he was incredibly kind and gentle and sweet.
Well, let's face it, Gene, not only is he the voice of Thomas the Tank Engine, but he also wrote Octopus's Garden. What's not to love?
What's not to love? And he plays a mean drum kit.
Yes, he does.
As indeed Pamela will endorse, because it seems as though there's a Ringo Starr theme going, because it was only a recent New York Real Talk where we featured, of course, the drummer from Free, Simon Kirk, who indeed had played with Ringo Starr. So, Pamela, it's over to you. Throw in some questions, please, Pamela. Go for it. I think we're finding it very difficult to understand what you're saying, Pamela. And that's not because you're in New York, because obviously Sammy's in Brooklyn. So, you know, it can't be a problem from that basis. Maybe there's a slight loose connection there. Have we managed to sort it through? You were coming through nice and clear beforehand, and then we sort of lost. Just mute, unmute. Are we okay now? Slightly better. Ah, technology. It's all sort of wondrous. Jean, let's turn to your good self. Would you, whilst we wait for Pamela to sort out her connection, I don't, maybe it's the height of the building she's actually on, I don't know. Who would you like to chat to?
Well, I'd like to ask Sam where she is in Brooklyn. I lived in Flatbush when I was 18. I went to New York. At that time, Flatbush, my family all lived there. So I was just curious where you are in Brooklyn, which area, not exactly where you are.
Yeah, we're not going to hone the entire sort of GPS satellite system and have Caitlin O'Shaughnessy from Airwolf come land on the roof sometime. Although I don't know, could make for an interesting aspect, really, certainly.
I'm currently in Greenpoint.
Greenpoint, very good. I have a friend who's a writer, and he says he's from Brooklyn, and he says all roads lead back to Brooklyn.
Brooklyn Roads. And Pamela has again proving that she's very creative. She's even logged in via another system now. It's wondrous. You know, it's great stuff. Pamela, I presume you can actually hear us. I feel as though we're going through a wonderful vertiginous. There's a word for your good self, Annette, that doesn't get used too often, like. But it's a wonderful way in which we're wandering through the PSM household from that perspective, which is always very interesting. Let's see now if the microphone is working. Can you communicate with us?
I can. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, excellent. But I can't see all your beautiful faces, so I'm very sad. I can see Alex's beautiful face. No, I was just following up on the grunge thing. I think it's quite important because I think now is a time where everything is in fashion. Every fashion is in fashion. Every music is in fashion. And that's because, and it goes along with the Me Too movement, which I hate to bring up, but I think it's important that women, what we're able to be part of the conversation now in is everything. And it's crucial. And that's why I'm so glad that I was able to introduce you, Alex, and everybody now to Jerry in the background.
If Jerry Leonard wants to make background entrances, noises off, we're used to it. I mean, Annette and Jean will say in the theatrical world, noises off, it happens all the time. He's prepping for his
magic.
Tour. Exactly.
I bursted into his room. So basically that it's a time where it's so phenomenal because women are actually being heard. They're writing things, they're directing things, they're making whatever music they want to make, they're wearing whatever they want to wear. We're here. And it's not from a man's perspective of how we are viewed, it's from our own perspective. And this is why I'm quite blown away with Sammy, and I'm so glad to sort of introduce, you know, her into the fold here, because Sammy is a Renaissance woman, and she did a video where she basically made every single prop by cardboard herself. She did everything from A to Z in this video and acted in it as well. And it is just phenomenal. Her creativity is so outside of the box and so beyond, and such an inspiration. And I'm really honored to be working with her. Mm. Yeah. So I'm sorry. As far as questions go, I guess.
It's a statement, Pamela. You've made the statement right. And I would say, you say, now we're here. Actually, as far as the Midwick Drive has been concerned, you've never been gone. We started this whole format off back in the 1980s. So, you know, it's always part and parcel of the whole process. Anyway, moving on that line, Jessica and Lucy, we'll go to Jessica first. Do you feel actually in terms of the in many ways, the work of Annette and Jean and Pamela and so on, does it kind of provide that inspiration? And you look at Sammy and you think, yes, I now need to go to Caracas, Venezuela and touchstone on the birth rate of Sammy Dagnino.
I think so. I mean, it's wonderful hearing so much about different forms of creativity, because I think something that's really interesting about all of the people here is that each of you have some form of like creative expression that's unique from one another, but they're also inspirational. And I think that just goes to show, like, I don't know, I think it's how individual art is and how much it can kind of, how much it is individual expression. And that I feel very like amazed I get to hear all this, and it makes me want to do more. And I think that's wonderful, because I might not be musically inclined at all or very DIY, but like, I want to try and I want to learn more. And I think that's really special. I think that if someone doesn't fully connect at first to some form of creativity or art that someone else does, I think that that person can inspire them and want to try. And I think that's what makes it like really beautiful and really awesome. So I'm very thankful that I get to be here and listen. So thank you.
Jessica, as you know, when you came over as an exchange student, we were always keen to obviously ensure that we keep that North Carolina link going. And even though you're based in Ireland these days, you're still a part of the Midwick Drive. It's very important. Yeah. Lucy, as the newbie, what are your thoughts on the whole sequence?
Yeah, still a newbie. I'm just going to echo what Jessica has said, really. I think especially seeing women do these creative things and really express themselves is so empowering. Like, I'm 20 years old, and when I, like, the people that I looked up to are just people I think, oh, I would like to be like them. I want to do the new creative things that they're doing, and it does really inspire me. And again, I'm really lucky to be sat here virtually speaking to all of you.
Of course, by the time she was 20, Samantha Dagnino had already basically produced a whole range of other things and pieces, but maybe that's because in South America you have a different sort of energy level. It's all good stuff, but... I want to turn to Jean briefly for this, because Jean, you very graciously said why people should get hold now of a copy of Annette André's autobiography. It is essential. It's tremendous. And also there is that opportunity, as you rightly said, of a signed photograph with either best wishes Annette André or love Annette André and a Randland Hopcook sort of flyer as well. Tremendous. But you forgot to mention, of course, the Jean Bruce Scott archive, which is a tremendous routine and also leads us to such things as when you actually performed animal expressions on a game show to demonstrate a farmyard. I mean, these are fantastic things.
Thank you so much. Thank you. The archive has been a labor of love since about January of this year. And it came out of a young woman who contacted me through the Airwolf Facebook pages and said, you know, you really inspired me when I was a little girl. And I went into law enforcement because of it. And she ended up working at the port in Dover in immigration and checking out all of the boats and the trucks that were coming up there. And I was happily surprised, because I'd been hearing from other people on the sites that they had been inspired to become pilots, to become, you know, to go into fields that they felt were male dominated. As Pamela was saying, it's been a long, slow growth to this place where we are now, that Jessica and Lucy and Sam are out there, you know, knocking down the doors and doing it with great power and legitimacy. And so the archive is for all of the different roles that I played. Meeting Annette a few months ago inspired me to think about writing. I started in the business when I was 13, and so and went to New York when I was 18 in 1974, which was a very scary time in New York City, which is why I lived with relatives in Brooklyn. And my uncle who I lived with was a police detective at the time. But anyway, so the archive covers all of these crazy things and these crazy connections. And Jackie Renwick is the curator, and has become one of my dearest friends. We talk every week for at least 2 hours. Yesterday we talked for 4 hours. And we talk about all kinds of things, our lives and where we live and politics and all of that. And then we put together what's coming up for the next week on the archive. And it's different each week. It covers different episodes that I did and series and all of that. So Annette, why I'm so happy reading your book right now. I'm thinking, oh, I don't have anyone nearly as titillating or exciting as Peter Graves in that my early part of my career. You're very brave, I think, talking about it, but you know, who wouldn't? He was on everybody's list of who we'd like to go out with. So.
Yeah, I'd have to exclude myself from that one, Jean. I was more of a Barbara Bain fan, but never mind. That's a Mission Impossible time, so yeah, yes. we'll step away from that, okay? But it has brought us around neatly, tragically, but not awesomely, to the last two interrogatives. You can see, just showing how time passes, I put up a backdrop of one of Annette's previous sort of Zoomers, where, of course, Jean, you're there, and various other folk are actually there. So it shows there's a kind of friendliness, a return to this whole system. So let's start off with Annette, first of all. Have you had a reasonably interesting Zoomer with us on the program today, Annette Andre?
Yes, it's been very interesting, actually. Very interesting. I love hearing what people have to say. And Jean, I loved all of you. So it was very interesting. Yeah, and I'd love to sit and talk with you at some time. I mean, really.
Well, you're all in San Diego. You should get together.
I would absolutely love that, Annette. Thank you so much. Let's do it.
Okay. You'll have to, through Alex, we'll get hold of each other.
Sounds great.
Jean, has it been good for you?
It's been fantastic. I was already in love with Annette and with Pamela down there, Crooked, and I'm so happy to meet Lucy. Love Jessica and Sam. My goodness, I'll be in Brooklyn sometime this year, so hopefully Alex can hook us up as well. We'll pop over to Manhattan and check out what Pamela's doing. So, yes, Alex.
Well, there you go.
This has been more than a reasonably good time.
Oh, there you go. And for the benefit of the radio listener, Pamela wasn't doing anything strange in the studio or indeed across the base. When you said benefit of Pamela Crooked down there, it's just her visual image needed to be sort of realigned. It's all right. She sorted it out now. It's very important. She's just being creative. Sammy, good for your good self?
Absolutely. I'm so inspired to hear all of you and all the things you shared and how we must inspire each other. You know, it's a very exciting time. And the fact that we can all create things and create
and listen
community
to more Sammy
is wonderful.
Dagnino music. It's tremendous. Jessica, we'll see you again very soon. Lucy Bills, likewise. Hope you really enjoyed it. To Annette Andre, Jean Bruce Scott, Samantha Dagnino, Pamela Sue Mann, Jessica Burtis, and Lucy Mills. Huge thanks. Be well. Keep inspiring folk. And do things awesomely, like.
What do you think?
It's with a heavy heart that I have to say we have lost one of our finest Midweek Drive correspondents, and in particular, having just done a show with the wife of this correspondent, Annette Andre, who produced an absolutely outstanding piece, as you will have heard, dear listener. Sadly, she also revealed at the end of the piece that Arthur Weingarten has actually moved on to another state of existence. He's passed away. He died earlier today on the 30th of October, aged 86. The only thing I can think about, apart from deep sorrow, to hopefully sort of show the respect and indeed appreciation that all of us have actually had in for Arthur, is to bring on board two excellent souls, both of whom have actually spoken with Arthur and connected with Arthur. I mean, I've worked with him for about 10, 12 years, actually, doing a monthly slot, obviously, with the Midweek Drive. And so we're pleased to obviously have the thoughts of Robin Pierce, a tremendous writer, of course, and director extraordinaire Graham Harper. Graham, if I can turn to you first, because obviously you'd worked with Annette before you met Graham, before you met Arthur. You met Arthur through the show. You connected with this whole thing. I mean, he leaves a huge legacy in terms of his writing and his overall oeuvre, really.
Yes, it's so sad to have this news. We only met several times via you and doing Zoom links, etc. What's extraordinary is he wrote so many, he worked on so many programs, television programs, both in America and over here. Maigret, I mean, was, he didn't write that, he was the executive producer, but he wrote fantastic works like Bonanza, Ironside, Murder, She Wrote, The $6 Million Man. It's extraordinary, his legacy. It's there for forever. So he's not really gone in that sense. It's just a shame and so sad. My memory of him was he was such a nice person, very worldly, very wise, very calm. I mean, I would love to have worked with him because that's a lovely calming influence on Troubled Waters, which happened a lot in film and television. And to have that executive working alongside you would, I know, be wonderful. So it's a shame that I never had that experience. But I enjoyed talking to him and hearing what he had to say. He was a lovely man.
Yeah, it's a shocking news and unexpected news. Phil Learness, of course, another mutual friend and colleague, didn't even realise that he was poorly. And I think, to be fair, he kind of kept his illness very much to himself. He was a consummate professional, and that was really echoed in something which certainly makes me quite emotional, that having spoken to Annette, basically Arthur's last wishes were that she should actually do his last letter from San Diego, do it live on the programme, because he enjoyed the Midweek Drive so much. And that actually means a huge amount to me, for actually to get that level of, I mean, I appreciate obviously the kind thoughts actually said, but for somebody who, as you said, Graham, has that kind of enormous wealth of experience in the entertainment capital of the world, as Hollywood actually is, for him to actually say that he genuinely looked forward and appreciated every segment we did every month with him. Sometimes, again, I still feel quite moved by that. And I mean, I don't know, maybe you know, for me, as you know, guys, I just feel, well, we're just doing an audio show via Zoom. We're trying to produce some stuff there, but maybe that sort of makes it a little bit more worthwhile. And again, kudos and huge tributes to Annette for actually being brave enough to actually do that, because I didn't realize that he'd passed away. She only let me know after she'd actually done the show that the listener will have just actually heard. So I think on that basis, the fact that he passed away this very morning and a few hours later, she's kind of reading his script. I think that's an awesome, in a sense, tribute to Arthur, but also a tribute to Annette as well.
Absolutely. That's a lovely thing for her to have done.
Yeah. Robin Pierce, I know one of the things that always stands with me was when you first heard Arthur on the show, when you started listening to the Midweek Drive, we were doing that. And I have to say, yes, to me, he also carried with him notions of sounding just like Stan Lee, another great American writer and comic book author. I'm not sure with Arthur, I mean, I did relate to him a couple of times. I think, you know, again, awesome connection on that basis. But Robin, would you like to share your own thoughts? I mean, I think Graham's really encapsulated a huge amount there of some of the fabulous dreams that he's left us with.
Well, you're absolutely right, because I think I first connected with him. I first heard him on the Midweek Drive, and he had that sort of Brooklyn accent, and had a gravelly tone to his voice that I thought I was listening to Stan Lee. And very kindly, as usual, you pushed me under the bus and told Arthur that I thought he sounded like Stan Lee when I was on the other end of a Zoom call with you, one of the early ones that we did last year. And it was the first time that I had actually talked to Arthur. And the first thing he did was, well, you know, Robin, and told me about his acquaintanceship with Stan Lee.
Oh, that's
funny. How they were both, you know, kids and, you know, knowing him in New York back in the day. And when you told me about Arthur Weingarten to begin with, I mean, I have always said that writers are the unsung heroes of films and television. Nobody knows who the screenwriters are usually. And you told me, right, we're going to be talking to Arthur Weingarten. And I thought, well, Arthur who? You told me he's married to Annette Andre. I thought, oh, I remember Annette Andre, yes, but Arthur who? And I looked on the Internet Movie Database and I could see all these shows that he'd written. And it suddenly became apparent to me that this guy had basically written my childhood, my formative years, the time that I actually got into, you know, sci-fi, fantasy and all this kind of stuff. And I did some kind of interview with him on Zoom and I had so many questions to ask and he was so gracious and had so many stories. And when you phoned me earlier this evening to tell me the sad news, the first thing that I remembered was one of the stories he told me. And some of the remarks that he made, which I just delighted in, because I think, unless I'm wrong, we did 4 Resonance Rewinds with him. And my favorite one that we did was The Green Hornet. And I asked him if he'd ever met Bruce Lee, who played Kato on the show. And he told me his Bruce Lee story about somebody giving Bruce Lee a nickel, which he could flick and actually embed into the wood of the set that they were building. And, you know, if anybody kind of underestimated their value or underestimated what they did, I think it was Arthur, because I remember we did a Man from U.N.C.L.E. show and there seemed to be a continuity gap during a fight. And I questioned this, and maybe I was being a little bit too smart for my own good, but he certainly brought me down to earth. And he said, and I quote, "Robin, it's television." I thought, he's absolutely right. He's absolutely right. I will now get my own head out of my own rear end and carry on with the chat. But he always did it. He was always so kind. And my last memory, we did the Wild Wild West, and we'd all watched the show and we'd all seen his credit, and he came on and he said, "I didn't write that show." They'd rewritten it so much it was nothing that he had written, but his name was still on it. And he said, "You know, for 55 years, I've been telling people I've written that show and I didn't." And, you know, I thought, what a gracious, kind man. He was a remnant of the golden and silver age of television. And, you know, he wrote our childhoods. He was a part of so many things that we have all watched, enjoyed, and part of the reason why we do what we do today. I mean, my God, he helped raise us.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with everything you said.
The one autobiographical novel he actually produced himself was The Sky is Falling, all about a plane going into the Empire State Building. I would say, Graham, that you really should get some funding to produce that as a movie, because it is an outstanding movie. It's one that probably, I think Arthur was talking about for several times. It's never quite managed to manifest itself, but that would be a wonderful time. But that's something for your good self to do, Graham. So that's another line. Maybe we could look at that. Gentlemen, it's been great that you've been able to connect with us today. I know Arthur, he'd be looking down and sort of saying, yeah, okay, I'll be right here. I'm not going anywhere. Well, hopefully it's a little bit more difficult to actually connect with him now, but certainly I appreciate, obviously, your thoughts, and I'm sure hopefully Annette will as well. And indeed, Arthur, obviously, from that point of view, we've lost a very capable, very precious member of the Midweek Drive. So the key thing, Robin and Graham, stay alive, stay well, stay healthy, and rest in peace, Arthur Weingarten.
Yes,
absolutely. And thank you for the memories.